The biggest thing, obviously, are, you know, the playbook, knowing where we're supposed to be and what we're doing. So I think that's really just the biggest thing for all the rookies, honestly. I'm coming from a totally different type of offense. It's just a whole different language for me that I'm trying to understand. So, you know, saying it out loud, just looking at the pictures in the book. I got a little mini whiteboard, so that helps me a lot, just kind of saying the play and then, okay, trying to write it out and then looking back at the play, see if I wrote it out correctly. So, you know, just little things here and there that I can try to pick up on.
Welcome into the lounge. It's episode 300, Garrett. That's a big number.
It's a very big number. We started this, what was the year? Was it 2016? I think it was 2016 that we started this. And yeah. It's been, when we started it, I did not necessarily know if we were going to get to 300 or not. You know, it was like, let's give this a shot. See if
I always thought we'd be lucky to get to 30.
Yeah, we'll see if we get to 3. We'll do one episode. and here we are 300 later. It's been fun. We've been able to, it honestly has been a really fun endeavor. We've been able to interview and have really in-depth conversations with just about every player on this team over the past 5 years, with coaches, with GM. It's just been both GMs. It's just been it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Let me tell you this, a little 300 trivia here for you. The 300 Wing Club in Major League Baseball, only 24 pitchers in that club. And a little story is, I saw one of them. I saw Randy Johnson's 300th win on June 4th, 2009. That was literally about a month before I got hired by the Ravens as an intern.
Was that before or after he cussed you out for being a bad reporter?
That was after. I stayed in the stands for this one. I was in the stands for this one. So Randy and I did not have a skirmish.
Okay.
As we did in the Yankees clubhouse.
Okay, so he wasn't waiting on you to congratulate him and be there to pop the bubbly for that 300th win?
No, that was a solo bubbly for me. But yeah, it was
big
cool.
Unit.
He was pitching for the Giants back then, I think, against the Nats.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah, this is, you know, since it's the 300th episode, we knew that we had to have a great guest. So we were thinking about who that could be, and we wanted to have somebody who, you know, like we were talking about recently, we like to get these guys on the lounge a little bit under the radar,
yep,
a little bit before they're super big time, and then we take credit for their success, because coming on the lounge is what set them on the path to success. So
The career bump,
that's what we're doing right now with Tylan Wallace, rookie wide receiver. He's joining us today. So with that intro, let's go ahead and welcome in Tylan.
Thrilled to be joined by Tylan Wallace, the Ravens' fourth round wide receiver. And Tylan, let's just start here. You are a guy, you know, Rashad Bateman, obviously, first round pick, a lot of attention. But my eyes kept going to Tylan Wallace when you were on that practice field. How'd you feel about rookie minicamp, OTAs minicamp? How do you feel about everything so far?
Yeah, I think it went really well to me, you know, not really knowing what to expect going into, you know, actually first time, you know, being in an NFL atmosphere, not really knowing what to expect. Overall, I think I did pretty well. I think the biggest thing, obviously, is the big learning curve. I think that's the biggest thing for me to get over that and, you know, obviously get everything down, make sure, you know, I know what I'm doing, where I'm supposed to be. But as far as that goes, I think everything went really well.
Nice. What were some of the takeaways that you got from coaches, you know, when you go into your summer break now, which doesn't last a whole lot. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't last long, so enjoy it. What homework did the coaches give you?
Yeah, the biggest thing, obviously, are, you know, the playbook. That's the biggest thing, I think, just really for all the rookies. I think, you know, obviously we all have the athletic ability to do whatever we need to do. I think the biggest part for us that we need to make sure that we're on top of is knowing where we're supposed to be and what we're doing. So I think that's really just the biggest thing for all the rookies, honestly.
So let's stick on that for a second. Like, for the average fan, I think everyone, whenever a rookie comes in, it's kind of the cliche thing to say, wait, I need to learn the playbook, right? And learn the mental side.
It's not a cliche. It's just a fact.
Yeah, but that's my question. That's my question. So, like, how different is it from what you've done in college? How much are you trying to learn, like, phrases and terms? Like, break it down for us a little bit here.
Yeah, so it's for me, it's a big difference. You know, for us, we, you know, I say Oklahoma State, we were a big tempo team, so we were kind of one word, go run the play. You know, here in the NFL, it's a lot different. You know, you get a long big little sentence slash paragraph, you know, for a
play, so. Slash paragraph.
So you got to kind of, you know, feel it out. It's the, as far as huddling up and everything, you know, just getting a feel for that and everything. So, yeah, I think that's the biggest adjustment for me is that, you know, I'm coming from a totally different type of offense.
Yeah. Is the style change an adjustment too? Because you guys are kind of spread it out, throw it deep, you know, Air Coryell kind of offense. And now you're in this run heavy, you know, RPO kind of offense. Has that been an adjustment?
Yeah, it definitely has been. You know, like I was saying, yeah, you know, tempo team, one word, go run the play. You know, we do a little bit of that here as well, but yeah, it's definitely different. Obviously, like you were saying, you know, a big run team, huddling up, all of that stuff. You know, it's just a whole different language for me that I'm trying to understand. So
when you're trying to learn it, I remember when Lamar Jackson was a rookie, he talked about how he would spend time in the hotel room in the mirror just rehearsing plays. And obviously it's different because he had to say it to the huddle and make sure that everyone got it clearly and all that. Mm-hmm. But like for you, how do you kind of try to learn these long paragraphs of plays? That like, are you doing flashcards? Like how are you trying to take all that in?
Yeah. So, you know, I've been trying to do a lot of stuff. Obviously I'll sit back, not in the mirror, but I'll read it out, kind of just read it out loud. So that way, like, so when somebody comes in the huddle and reads it to me, that I can hear it, you know, I'm actually saying it, not just thinking it in my head. So, you know, saying it out loud, just looking at the pictures in the book. I got a little mini whiteboard. So that helps me a lot, just kind of saying the play and then, okay, trying to write it out and then looking back at the play, see if I wrote it out correctly. So, you know, just little things here and there that I can try to pick up on.
Nice.
That's interesting.
Yeah. But from a football standpoint, like from an actual physical standpoint, not the mental side, something that Ryan and I have talked about, and it definitely stands out in watching you, like you have such a shiftiness in your game and the way that you run routes. It seems like you're a really polished route runner as a rookie. Like how have you developed that area of your game? And is that something that you have a lot of pride in?
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. You know, I think that's a big thing. You know, obviously at this level, you know, route running is you got to have it to be able to get open, especially with the, you know, the type of players that we're going against in this league. So, you know, that's kind of a thing that I've definitely been trying to work, make sure, you know, make sure I'm doing and being on top of everything that I need to be on. But yeah, I think for the most part, I think I've kind of somewhat always been able to do it. I haven't always had the, you know, ability to show everybody that I can, but I think now at this level that I'm able to do that.
Well, the interesting thing for me was I was kind of, you know, just watching you in college, you had a lot of highlights in which you were just dunking on people with contested catches. You know, like that was your highlight reel. And I was like, all right, you know, let's see, you know, how is route running some of the shorter stuff, you know, when it's not everything, you know, everything's not a bomb and stuff like that. Like, how does he doing that? Is he sudden or is he just kind of fast and a big bodied contested catch guy? And I really saw that suddenness. Like, that's what kind of caught my attention, was because I thought of you as, all right, you played on the outside at Oklahoma State, almost exclusively on one side. You're an outside receiver. Can he adjust? Because you are a little bit on the shorter side for an NFL wide receiver. I don't want to call you short.
No, you're right. I guess.
I was like, can he play in the slot? That was my question. And your route running and suddenness in there really kind of told me, all right, I think Tylan will be able to do that.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the biggest thing too. You know, just because, you know, people kind of see, they haven't seen me do it. They, you know, they didn't think I can. And I think that was just the biggest thing trying to prove, you know, just because if you haven't seen me play in the slot and run certain routes doesn't mean that I can't do it. So I think that's the biggest misconception, I guess, going into the whole thing is that, you know, they haven't seen me do it, so they don't think I can.
Right. Mm-hmm. Just for the record, I didn't think you couldn't.
No, yeah, I'm with you. Not you. I'm with you.
It sounds like that probably was something that came up a time or two during the pre-draft process when you were meeting with teams, did it?
Yeah, for sure. They asked me all the time, like, so why were you only one side on the outside? You know, why was that? And I was like, that's just how things were ran up there at Oklahoma State. That's how we did it. So
interesting. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Garrett.
During that pre-draft process, like, guys have different opinions. It's obviously like a super stressful time and it's challenging. Like, what did you take away from it? Like, did you enjoy it? Did you hate it? Was draft weekend, like, guys have so many different emotions about draft weekend, the whole process. Some guys look at draft weekend as like, that's a terrible memory. I thought I was going to go away earlier and I hated it. Other guys say it was the best moment of my life. Like, how do you view that process and then draft weekend?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of bittersweet in a way. You know, it's a fun process to be a part of, but it's very nerve-wracking for sure as well. Yeah, for me, that draft weekend, it was stressful, but it was also, you know, just one of the happiest moments of my life, you know. Kind of just sitting there the whole week and just waiting. You know, obviously, like I said before, you know, I was expecting to go earlier, so it was a little stressful just having my family, everybody sitting there. We were just waiting. And then, you know, finally Baltimore came and got me. And now once that happened, you know, I cried and everything. It was just one of the happiest moments of my life. So it's kind of a little bit of both, you know, happiest moment and also at the same time.
Well, I got to pat myself on the back here, Tylan, and you'll come to learn that I do this often. before day two of the draft kicked off, I was like, Ravens fans, keep your eye on Tylan Wallace. You know, it might have been before day one. It was because it was before we picked Rashad. When this, you know, everybody knew we were going to take a wide receiver at some point. And I was like, on day two, keep your eye on Tylan Wallace because the scouting report, you know, blocking, like, you know, he's a good blocker, unselfish, you know, big time production, all that stuff. I was like, keep your eye on this guy. Probably in round two, maybe round three, if the Ravens were to get lucky. Then round four, I was like, here we go. Yeah. So I kind of called it in a little bit of a way, I got to say.
But just to butt in here, Tylan, Mink didn't call it.
I get half credit.
He this is his move. He'll just throw out 20 different guys every day and say, keep an eye on them. And then any of them hit, he said, oh, I called it. So that's kind of what happened.
That's what's happening?
No, yeah. No.
But we both were excited when they
yes,
took you.
Yes. But were you like, do you still have a chip on your shoulder that, you know, you lasted until the fourth round when a lot of people did project you to be a potential second round pick?
For sure. I think that's always going to be a thing that, you know, that just add even more motivation that I already have. But, you know, for me, I'm just happy, you know, everything happens for a reason. I'm happy that I ended up where I ended up. So, you know, I'm not really mad at that, but, you know, I think I could always use that as motivation for sure.
Yeah. You talk about the emotional moment of being picked and, you know, that video of you hugging your twin brother, for listeners out there who don't know, Tylan has a twin brother, Trayson, who they went to Oklahoma State together. Trayson was a quarterback at first and then converted to wide receiver and then was forced to retire from football in June of 2019 after he suffered his third ACL injury, right?
Yeah.
Third ACL tear. So he was forced to retire. And the video of you two hugging when you got drafted, that long embrace, I got to say, I have an older brother and I teared up a little bit. I was like, all right, we're slicing onions in here. What, just take me through that moment.
Yeah. You know, it was crazy. It's what we've been working for our whole life. And, you know, it's crazy to me that, you know, that's something that we've been dreaming of since we were little. And it's crazy that it got cut short for him. You know, it sucks. We've talked about it so many times, you know, that, that I just want to, well, especially me, you know, it's something that I want to go out here and do and live out our dream for us, even though, you know, he's physically unable to do it. So once that my name got called, it was just such a special moment. And I knew how much it meant, not just for me, but for him as well. So just to be able to kind of live out our dream for both of us, you know, meant the world to me.
That's awesome.
Cool. And, you know, just to give listeners a little background, when you were deciding on colleges, you know, you have offers from all these different places.
15 different offers, 4-star guy coming out of Texas.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting recruited by everybody, right? And for you, it was imperative to play with your brother in college. Like, take me through that recruiting process and why that was so significant that you guys were a package deal.
Definitely. That was the thing. Yeah, going into it, we knew – you know, we're going to have offers here and there, but I think the biggest thing for us is that we wanted to play together. We knew a lot of people, especially brothers, don't really get an opportunity like that, you know, all the time. So we thought, why not take advantage of it? So Oklahoma State was one of the first schools to really offer both me and him together. So we thought we'd take advantage of that. And also, even after tearing his ACL, you know, they honored his scholarship as well. And we loved, you know, obviously the loyalty to that. So I think we committed actually when we were sophomores, so we kind of figured it out, like that's where we want to be. We don't really need to see anything else.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's awesome. Now, this has all been very lovey-dovey with you and Trayson, but as twin brothers both playing football, I know there had to be some battles. Give us a good story.
Oh, yeah.
Give us a good story.
So many. I don't even know where to start. Let's see. Really, all the. I mean, we in all the way from Pee Wee. We go at it all the time at the house. My mom would tell you so many stories, but. So I mean, let's see. Pee Wee practice. We used to always just go at it. You know, obviously, especially the coaches. They love to see me and him go at it because they know we just go as hard as we could with each other. So I mean, it doesn't stop. I mean, it's every Pee Wee, high school, even in college. Like we go when he moved over to receiver, we'd go at it. You know, obviously that was probably brought up a little bit more competition now that we're playing the same position. But yeah, I mean, we go kind of doing around the bags, kind of coming back, catching the ball. We do that together, trying to go at it. I mean, there's nonstop stories for sure.
So like in Pee Wee, was he the quarterback and you were the receiver?
Yeah, he was.
So was it basically kind of a cheat code for whatever team got the Wallace brothers?
I guess you could say that for sure.
I feel bad for every other wide receiver on that Pee Wee team. You know, when you're another wide receiver, you're like, he's just going to throw it to his brother every time. Come on.
Hey, that's how it goes.
They got to step it up. That's amazing. So then you go to college, and holy cow, you talk about an instant impact just blowing up. You start lighting the place on fire. I mean, your sophomore year was your biggest year. You go off for 86 catches for 1,491 yards and 12 touchdowns. What was that like? Because Oklahoma State, I mean, it kind of was wide receiver you. You know, we had Dez Bryant, Justin Blackman, James Washington, Marcel Aitman. What was it like for you kind of being next in line and going off that well, that big?
The biggest thing for me, I think, just watching those guys in front of me, you know, my freshman year was kind of a year for me to watch James Washington, Marcel Aitman, you know, Chris Lacy, all those guys, and watch how things are supposed to be done and how the culture is at Oklahoma State. So watching those guys, they showed me how to practice, how you're supposed to act in meetings, you know, just really how to treat it seriously and, you know, what you're supposed to do at practice and everything like that. So the biggest thing, you know, I learned a lot from them as far as how that goes. So I think going on to my sophomore year, I knew what the expectations were and how you're supposed to treat practice and meetings and things like that. So I think just picking up those things from them helped me become the player I am.
Mm-hmm. And then when you kind of burst onto the scene that way, like how did things change after that season?
Yeah. You know, for me, it was crazy. You know, my sophomore year, I wasn't, you know, really, you know, obviously I was expecting to go do big things, but nothing like that. I was just going out there running around playing football. You know, I wasn't really thinking too much about anything. So, you know, obviously having a year after that, you know, you come back and you realize, okay, you know, people are going to know who you are now. You got to back it up. You know, you can't just have one big year and, you know, just call it quits or whatever. So the biggest thing for me was making sure that I was on top of, you know, being continuous with that production. So, you know, I was going to off season training hard, obviously, you know, just doing everything that I can to make sure that I could always back it up.
And then your junior year,
go ahead.
Yeah. Your junior year, you're having a really good season and then you end up tearing your ACL there. Mm-hmm. How, like, obviously it's difficult to get injured. Anybody that has dealt with a serious injury has said that. How tough was it? And how much did you lean on your brother in that process, knowing what he had gone through and dealing with that multiple times?
Yeah, that it was really tough for me. That was the first time I've ever been seriously injured before. So that was the first time I had missed practice and missed games like ever since I started playing football. So it was really tough on me. But, you know, yeah, like I was saying, to have him to lean on was definitely a huge help for me. I could go and ask him anything as far as the rehab process goes, as far as a mental state and everything. You know, why does my knee feel like this? Like, when am I going to be able to start running or do this and that? So, you know, just to have him by my side and coach me, kind of really coach me through the whole process, helped me out so much.
I love the tweet from your brother after you went off for 10 catches for 220 and 2 touchdowns against Texas, big time rival. He tweeted, quote, "Don't forget, you got to take out the trash today."
So I remember that.
That's amazing. So were there questions? I mean, you bounced back your following year, your senior year. I mean, 922 yards and 6 touchdowns. obviously it didn't get to the level, you know, it was a weird season last year, obviously. It didn't get to the level of your sophomore year. Were scouts, you know, were teams when they were talking to you pre-draft, were they at all concerned about the knee still or any kind of lingering thing?
Yeah, that, I think that was the biggest issue. And I think that's the thing I kind of, going into my senior year, that I wanted to prove to everybody that, you know, I was good, my knee was fine and everything like that. So that was the biggest thing for me. And I think that everybody wanted to see was that, is he going to be the same guy that he was before the injury? So, yeah, I think as far as that, I think I went out there, you know, I think it took me a couple of games to get back in the feel of things. But after the first couple of games, I think I was all good after that.
Mm-hmm. Nice. I saw NFL Network's Bucky Brooks compared you to Kenny Stills. That was your comp. What do you think of that comp?
I mean, I like it. I can't say I hate it, honestly. I mean, it's a great receiver to be compared to, if you ask me. So, you know, I love seeing things like that, obviously. But, yeah, I can't complain about that one.
So, you know, for you now, you come into the NFL, you enter a receiver room that I think that that's probably going to be the most eyes-on competition during training camp. That's often the case around here, as I'm sure you've heard. There's always a lot of interest in wide receiver here with the Ravens. And in training camp, there's going to be a lot of guys fighting not just for roster spots, but also for starting jobs and roles and all of that. Like, how do you see that competition this summer? And how do you, you know, what do you need to do in order to set yourself and put yourself in a position where you can make an impact, you know, as a rookie?
Right. You know, I think I see it really being really good. You know, a lot of great receivers in there. You know, obviously guys with a little bit more experience too as well. So it's going to be really interesting. But I think the biggest thing, I like I was saying, I think that's the biggest thing for all the rookies is just, you know, they have a year ahead of us, a couple years ahead of us. So I think the biggest thing for us is making sure when we're out on the field, we know what we're doing and where we're supposed to be. You know, for me, I think, you know, obviously, I think for, like I was saying earlier, with all the rookies, I don't think the challenge is the physical aspect of the game. It's more, you know, obviously the mental part. So mm-hmm. I think as long as I get that down and make sure I know what I'm doing and where I'm supposed to be at, then I think everything else will take care of itself.
What's it like with you and Rashad? Obviously, I'm sure you guys are getting close, but there's also probably an element of competition out there. You know, friendly competition.
Oh yeah, always. I think with all the receivers, you know, there's always that friendly competition out there. But yeah, obviously me and him just going at it all the time. Real friendly, not nothing too crazy yet. So we'll see what happens when training camp rolls around. But yeah, obviously real good guy, a great teammate, just a kind of just always friendly competition going at it.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, Tylan, I got to say, you are in an honored position here with us today. This is our 300th episode of The Lounge, okay? We're big 300. This is a milestone episode. And fans were tweeting at us. They were like, you better get somebody big. You better get somebody good to come on The Lounge for this one. So hey, I just want to let you know.
I appreciate it. I'm on it.
Well, thank you for joining us, man. We really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Cool. Great stuff. Couldn't think of a better episode for number 300. That's as good as it gets.
Yeah, I like him. I like him a lot. I mean, we can talk about his play and his ability, but I also just think he's a really good guy. That was one thing too that, you know, Mike Gundy talked about a lot with him, is that all like the off the field stuff, like first guy in, last guy out. Just a little story: as he was leaving from doing the interview, he had a few footballs in his hands. He got like, he wanted to make sure that he had the good footballs when he goes back home to train, so that when he's training over the course of the month before he comes back, that he's got the good footballs. So I thought that kind of gives you a little bit of insight into who this guy is.
Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah. All right, so how are you going to celebrate 300, Garrett?
How am I going to celebrate?
Yeah.
Come on, man. I don't know that I'm going to – I'll celebrate in a certain way. I don't know.
What?
How are you going to – how do you celebrate the 300th?
Well, you know, I'm a fat boy, so my mind immediately goes to what something I can eat, either 300 of that thing or, you know, write 300 on it. So I think maybe I'll make myself – a cake, and I'll write 300 on it, and I'll eat that.
Okay.
At least a cupcake. Something.
What about like a high-end beverage, you know?
Ooh.
It's obviously nice. It's not pumpkin beer season, but, you know, one of those good, high-quality beers.
That's not a bad 300
idea. 300 of them. 300 beers.
300 beers. It should be an interesting the last day tomorrow.
That'll be the last episode.
If yeah, that's the last episode. We stopped at 300. We drank 300 beers. I'll stay away from that one.
Yeah, I agree. All right, what is one of your favorite podcast memories?
When you totally botched the Timmy Jernigan podcast and didn't hit the record button until halfway through the interview. How about that one? And then I had to tell the knock knock jokes over again.
That was a good one. That was good.
Because you know there's what? Nothing like a second time hearing a knock knock jokes. It really lands the second time telling the same one.
So, just so listeners know, at that time the system was much different that we had. It feels like talking about like the Stone Age, but the system we initially had in place was not good. You had to go like across the room in the dark, and there was like a little system in there that you hit record on, and you couldn't actually see it. So like as you're doing the interview, you had no idea whether it was the audio was there, right. It was recording, any of it. You just had to basically trust that it was working. And on that one, forgot to hit record. And
your one and only job, your most important job, let's say that. That would be like doing a Zoom interview and just being on mute the whole time.
Well, you know, the reality there is that you don't pull any weight on the tech side. You didn't pull any weight. So had to handle everything. There was so much going on. I had to handle all the technical. I have to carry the interview. So
get out of here.
So all of that is going on. There was just a little too much. You know what? Let's play a clip from that Timmy Jernigan interview of getting the knock-knock jokes the second time and see how they land. So this clip, this is the second knock-knock jokes. He's already got them. So you'll see how it's.
Well, obviously it's the second because the first weren't recorded.
The first one was just in our memory.
So I got some knock-knock jokes for you. You ready?
Okay.
All right, first one. Knock-knock.
Who's there?
Lettuce.
Lettuce who?
Lettuce in already.
No.
He kind of laughed, though. I'll take his sympathy. All right, number two.
What we got?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Ho, ho.
Ho, ho, who?
You know, your Santa impression could use a little work, Timmy.
No way. I don't know.
All right, number three. Here we go. Ice back on top. Yep, back on top. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Impatient cow.
Impatient cow. That was a nice one. I'll give you that one.
Well, that was a horrific moment.
He gave it an okay effort.
He gave it a pity laugh, and Timmy Jernigan had such a good laugh that I'll still take the pity laugh.
Yeah, it's true.
Now that we're going down memory lane, let's play a clip from our very first episode of The Lounge, which kicked off with the kicker, Justin Tucker. Welcome to the Ravens Lounge, the very first Ravens Lounge podcast. I'm Ryan Mink.
And I'm Garrett Downing. This has been a long-awaited process here. We're two staff writers for the Baltimore Ravens. And what we want to do is we want to take the conversations that happen behind closed doors here. Both Ryan and I, we've been here for 5 years together. And we have a lot of conversations in our office. And we want to bring some of those conversations to the public view here.
So why is it called the Ravens Lounge? It's called that because players, staff members, basically a lot of people come through our office and end up shooting the breeze with us, talking football. We end up arguing with each other. So we're going to bring this to you every single Tuesday. We will be releasing a new podcast, and we are lucky to be joined on the very first one by Justin Tucker. Justin, you've accomplished a lot. This might be at the top of the list. You're kicking off the Lounge podcast, the first ever guest, first ever podcast. This might be your greatest honor.
Seriously, though, I was just about to say, what an honor. What an achievement. This is great, man. We're comfortable sitting here on the couch. I feel like I've made it.
Right. Yeah. Where does this rank? Super Bowl, big contract.
This is Pro Bowl. This is by far and away, this is at the top.
Nice.
Well, good stuff. It's been a fun ride. Garrett, as much as I like to give you a hard time, it's been fun. It's been real. We've been doing this for a long time. You're somewhat of a friend.
Now you're setting it up like the 300th is the final episode, and with that the announcement is that there will never be another Lounge.
How many are we going to get to? What's your over under?
Let's get to 300 more. Let's get to 600. Let's get to 500, 600, 700, 1000.
Let's go big.
That's a good way. That's a perfect way to end it. To end it with a big episode. This is the big 300.
Anyway, we'll be back with you next week. It's 4th of July week. The Ravens offices will be closed, but we'll still have an episode for you. We got a great email. We've gotten a bunch of emails, like we asked from everybody. You know, you can always email us at thelounge@ravens.nfl.net. We asked for emails. You delivered. We're going to read a bunch of them next week when we do our 4th of July episode. And if we read your question, you get a t-shirt. We got them. We still have a bunch in the box, in the lounge. We're going to mail them out because we're, you know, now we can go to the post office, all that stuff. COVID's looking good. So,
and also, in honor of the 300th episode, we want to get some ratings. It's been a while since we've read a good rating. Oh, wow. Yeah, we're making the call for ratings again.
I like it.
For 300, you got to give a rating. Give us a 5-star great review.
Give us a 300-star review. And next week, also, we got this email. It was a great suggestion. We're going to do a barbecue draft. Okay, so we've done the meat draft. This one is just items that you would find at a 4th of July barbecue. We're going to make the list, and we're going to have a draft. So that should be a lot of fun, too.
For sure.
Anyway, thanks for listening, and we'll be back with you next week.